You know, I've always been anxious. I'm the kind I almost sprint to the pulpit sometimes, but I'm having to learn to social distance from these song leaders that they don't get in a hurry, you know. So, I do appreciate those good songs, and it's good to be here. Appreciate all that are here. Appreciate those that are visiting with us, and want to encourage everybody to take a Bible and think along with me tonight. I want to start by giving you a couple of short passages to think about. Contrast. Proverbs 7 and verse 10. Speaking of a young man, Solomon said, "And there a woman met him with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart." And then I want you to look at 1 Timothy 2. And we'll pick up at verse 8. "I desire therefore that the men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. In like manner also that the women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly clothing, but which is proper for women professing godliness with good works." Now you look at these two passages, and what a contrast. One woman's attire sent a message that she was a woman of immorality. Then he says, on the other hand, there is that which is proper for those that profess godliness. There is attire that would not speak of immorality, would speak of godliness. We began last week talking about how we should dress. Entitled last week, "Some Vital Principles That Govern Our Dress." I set forth a principle last week, and I believe this is indisputable. Culture tends to impact the lives of Christians. Romans 12, the call to us is, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Why does he warn the Roman saints about being conformed to the world? Because that's our natural tendency. We do it without even thinking. I've often, in lessons on dress, asked people, especially if I get out of the South, you know, "Have y'all noticed that I talk with a Southern accent?" And they all laugh, you know. And I raise the question, you know, how do you think I got this Southern accent? I didn't one day decide this is the way I want to talk. I got a Southern accent because I grew up around people that said "y'all" and drawled. And, you know, I have worked on over the years trying to learn how to put the G on the end of words like running and fishing. You know, I try to pronounce the G. I may get kicked out of the South for that. You never know. You know, but culture, it just comes in on us without our thinking about it. And let me tell you, that's okay when it comes to talking Southern. You know, liking college football. You know, it's okay. That's part of our culture. But we also need to realize that it can influence us in ungodly ways too. And so, I don't normally like to do this, but I'm going to review last week's lesson. But let me assure you, the review won't be quite as long as the lesson. I'm going to try to make it at least 5 minutes shorter. No, not anything like that. We need to start off with the realization, though, that when we're talking about this, we're not the lawmakers. And I think that I approach that from two different standpoints. One is, I get concerned. I am very concerned about what I consider immodest, indecent dress among Christians. Well, I can't in turn though say, okay, well, I'm going to lay down a dress code that God hasn't authorized. But there is also, in the same vein, culture is not always inherently evil. Just like speaking Southern, enjoying college football. But sometimes we decide things aren't right because it's not what we like. As we get older, we look at fashions that the young people wear. And sometimes we're not really evaluating them in the sense of, is it godly? Is it decent? Our evaluation is simply, is it different? We do that to people of different cultures. You know, I can still remember the shock I felt, but I was okay with it, but it shocked me when I was in St. Paul, Minnesota, and the Nigerian immigrant who spoke with a British accent, he wore the name for the robe was, but it looked like to me a bathrobe. It was a traditional Nigerian robe that men wear. He wore that to church. Like, really? You know, I'm used to coat and tie. And the interesting thing about him, some nights he wore a coat and tie to the meeting. Some nights he would dress like that. I've got to let culture be culture when it's not ungodly. But the fact that God has not laid down a dress code doesn't mean we're free to do what we want to do. Hebrews 5, we are expected to discern between good and evil. We need to learn to think about things, have a sense of discernment. And yes, there are gray areas. But we live, who would dispute the fact that we live in the midst of an ungodly world? Do we expect most fashion to be godly? On the contrary. You know, it's good when you find something that is good. These things can affect our eternal destiny. And I left out one. I knew I'd do that. Well, I'm going down the list typing them. The heart. Those that are taking notes, pencil it in. Dress reflects the heart. So often, if I, in a lesson or in a private conversation, I mention a concern about a certain type of dress or undress, somebody will say to me, well, you know, God only looks at the outward appearance. God does, get that backwards. God only looks at the heart. He doesn't look at the outward appearance. And the reality is, as we talked last week, what's in our heart? It reflects itself in our words, in our actions, and even in our dress. And then, when I say others are watching, there are two things I just remind you. One, I don't want to dress in such a way as to dim my light, to not be a good influence upon others. And then secondly, I don't want to dress in a way that would make me a stumbling block to others. And we will say some about that tonight. There is a difference. You know, one is a positive, one's a negative. I want to be a shining light if I really want to please God. That's the positive. Then there is also, I don't want to be a negative. And then, finally, and I think this is one of the most important points I tried to make last week. Avoid unnecessary risk. People get into disputes about where the line is. And again, I'm not the lawmaker. But don't push. If you're not certain where the line is, then why don't you take a good step back and know that you're on the right side of it? Be safe. I really believe that if you take these principles and the one I omitted about the heart, I think if you would really just run down these each time you pick something out, it would solve most questions. But I have a couple other points I want to make tonight. And I want to begin with the idea that ought to be obvious. Public nakedness is shameful. I want to start in Exodus, the 20th chapter, with you. In verse 26, when he's talking about the priest, he told them, they were not to make the steps, and there is a reason. Nor shall you go up by steps to my altar, that your nakedness may not be exposed on it. You're not to be uncovered. In Exodus 28:42, he even tells them, as he's given the description of their clothing, that underneath the tunic, he said, you make these linen trousers to cover their nakedness. They shall reach from the waist to the thighs. They wore something underneath, lest they be exposed. Look at Ezekiel, the 23rd chapter. Now, Ezekiel, in a very graphic chapter, condemns the idolatry and, in some ways, the political flirtations of Israel and Judah with the nations around them. And God had called Israel to be a holy people. You know, they were looking toward Assyria. They were looking toward Babylon. You know, they looked to these to find, instead of finding strength in God, they'd go to these nations. Well, he depicts it as immoral women. And he gets quite graphic at times in his description. But I want you to note a couple of things. Verse 18. Ezekiel 23, verse 18. She revealed her harlotry and uncovered her nakedness. There's this association between prostitution, immorality, and the nakedness. Verse 29. They will deal hatefully with you and take away all you have worked for and leave you naked and bare. The nakedness of your harlotry shall be uncovered, both your lewdness and your harlotry. Public nakedness. It's associated here by Ezekiel with immorality, with lewdness. In Revelation, the third chapter, he's talking to the Laodiceans about their lukewarmness, and he uses, in a figurative way, nakedness based on that. Everybody ought to know this is not the way you want to be. Verse 17, because you say, I am rich, have become wealthy, and have need of nothing, and do not know that you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. These folks weren't literally naked, but he uses that to make his point. Verse 18, I counsel you to buy from me gold refined in the fire, that you may be rich, and white garments that you may be clothed, that the shame of your nakedness may not be revealed, and anoint your eyes with eye salve that you may see. He writes these words based on the assumption they understand the shame of nakedness. You know, you couldn't make that point to a lot of people. There are a lot of people that find no shame in that. And I think what happens when I say that, everybody goes, "What?" You know, so far you've just been Captain Obvious here. You know, we all know that. But do we realize what Adam said in Genesis 3, that you can still have on some clothes and be naked in the eyes of God? Genesis 3, you remember, well, actually, let's go back to chapter 2. In their age of innocence, they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. But when they ate of the fruit, when sin entered the world, verse 7, the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves coverings. The word that he uses here for coverings, it's a word that can be translated a belt, a girdle, an apron, a loin covering. You know, some of you old enough to remember the old Tarzan movies and show, probably about like what Tarzan had. You know, this is what they made of the fig leaves. They were ashamed because they were naked, so they put these together. And then when they hear the sound of God walking in the garden, Adam hides. Look at what he says in verse 10. I heard your voice in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, and I hid myself. Now, Adam was wearing at this time something about like a man's swimsuit today. But he hides himself because he's naked. That's the way he says it. And the very next verse says, notice what God says to him. He says, Adam, don't be so silly. In the 21st century, people will wear that to the pool and the beach all the time. No. His words were, who told you that you were naked? That's his response. It's not, Adam, you've got on plenty of clothes. He said, who told you you were naked? And in verse 21, for Adam and his wife, the Lord God made tunics of skin and clothed them. I want to be careful here. I don't want to make more out of this than is there. But I've heard people say that when God made tunics of skin for them, that we ought to just emphasize the word skin. That he made, fig leaves aren't going to last you too long. You know, clothing that's made out of the leaves of a tree, any tree, it's going to wilt, it's going to, so he made them something more durable. I've heard some say that this is really the first symbolic animal sacrifice. They had sinned, and therefore, you know, in order to have an animal's skin as your clothing, the animal has to die. You know, I hate to tell you all that if some of you didn't realize that's where your leather came from, but the animal dies before it can become clothing. And so the animals died to cover them. Okay. I will grant you that the skin of an animal is a whole lot more durable than fig leaves. I know the animals had to die. Now, whether they were, God saw that as a sacrifice or not, that to me might be a bit of a stretch. But here's a question. If it's only about durability, if it's only about the animals dying, why didn't God out of the skin make the same kind of clothing that Adam and Eve had shaped? The loin coverings. Instead, he made for them a tunic. A tunic, Gesenius in his Hebrew dictionary says that this was a garment that would reach from the shoulders to the knees. Said sometimes to the ankles, but generally it was a shoulder to the knee kind of garment. Questions. Y'all see all those little question marks up there? If we're wearing about what Adam wore, we wouldn't make it out of fig leaves. But we're not any more covered than him. Would we feel ashamed? Again, I'm not the lawmaker. But when God saw two naked people, he clothed them in something he called a tunic. Let's think about a little more about proper clothing, though. I want you to turn to 1 Timothy 2. This is a passage we began with. And it is amazing to me how many different ways the words are translated. I read from the New King James. Adorn themselves in modest apparel with propriety and moderation. The King James, modest apparel with shamefacedness and sobriety. The New American Standard says, adorn themselves with proper clothing modestly and discreetly. The English Standard, respectable apparel with modesty and self-control. The interlinear I have, which is the Greek words and it just puts English equivalents underneath it, says modest with propriety and discretion. Now, I'm not saying it wouldn't be worth our time. It would be in a different lesson to take and go through detailed word studies of each of these. But sometimes some of the best word studies you can do are this. Just put translations side by side. And what emerges from that? To me, what emerges is the picture that we ought to dress in ways that are decent, that show good judgment, that understand what is proper behavior for a Christian, that reflect godliness. Understand, our clothes say something about us. They send a message. As I said last week, a lot of times the shirts I wear send a message about what team I'm rooting for. And a lot of you do that. Y'all send the wrong message because y'all root for the wrong teams. But still, you know, we send a message by our clothing. Sometimes we send a very bad message. Look at Genesis, the 38th chapter. Now, there's a lot I don't know about this. But Genesis 38 is the story of Judah and his daughter-in-law that had, two of Judah's sons die. She expects the third to be given to her. Verse 14 says, so she took off her widow's garments. Now she had on some kind of clothing that told everybody that saw her she was a widow. Well, she got rid of those. Covered herself with a veil and wrapped herself and sat in an open place which was on the way to Timnah. For she saw that Shelah was grown and she was not given to him as wife. When Judah saw her, he thought she was a harlot because she had covered her face. Now, again, today, if I saw somebody with their face covered, today we think corona. That'd be our first thought. But, we would think more of modesty. But whatever way she did this, and I'm sure there's more to the story than the Bible's not interested in giving us all the details of, but the way she was dressed said to Judah, that woman's a harlot. It is possible to dress in that way. Matthew, the 12th chapter, a passage I alluded to earlier. A good man, verse 35, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. Our heart is going to be reflected in our dress. And as I said last week, why do I have a closet in which color-coded, there's just a tremendous amount of orange and blue, and a percentage of it has a logo on it? Well, it's because when it comes to college football, that's where my heart is. And our heart reflects in that, in everything. What's our message? Well, let me give you three things to be careful of. When I look at 1 Timothy 2, though I think he sets forth principles that have broad application, we dress in ways that are proper for those professing godliness, for women specifically he mentions here, it would seem to me the first concern there is the look at me spirit. In like manner also that the women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly clothing, but which is proper for women professing godliness with good works. If we say about somebody, he lives on a very modest income. They live in a very modest house. What do we mean by that? We mean they don't have a big income. They don't have a huge ostentatious mansion they dwell in. It's just simple. And that's really modest is about simple, not trying to draw attention. 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter, has some similarity here, where he says, do not let your adornment, verse 3, be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing gold, or putting on fine apparel. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. For in this manner, in former times, the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands. And he goes on to mention Sarah obeying Abraham. I haven't heard a good argument on this in several years, but I used to hear it a good bit. Do you think that 1 Timothy 2 and 1 Peter 3 forbid the wearing of jewelry? Especially women wearing jewelry. That was back before men, other than a wedding band, tended not to wear much. But, does this prohibit? And there were people who were very adamant with it was the old, means what it says what it means. Well, what it says is, adorn yourselves the way the holy women of old did. Go back there to Genesis and read about those holy women of old in the days of Abraham. Those women wore rings in their noses sometimes. You know, they wore jewelry. His point is not that you can't wear any nice clothes. That you can't wear, you know, something that looks good, that you can't have on makeup and some jewelry. But his point is, there ought to be a gentle and quiet spirit. What is a quality that over and over and over and over again is mentioned in Scripture? Humility. What's condemned repeatedly? Pride. But there are people whose dress just screams, "Look at me." They want to be the center of attention. And I believe that's one of the things we ought to think about. There's a second one. Not promoting the works of the flesh. Ephesians 5 and verse 11. When he talks about we once were in darkness, but now we're in the light. He says, have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. There's some clothing, particularly the t-shirts, that they promote the works of the flesh. And I can't say that I haven't seen Christians wearing shirts promoting alcohol, promoting gambling, immorality. You know, everybody's musical tastes are different. And I know it gets a fine line here, but there are just some musical groups, individuals, that just are inseparable from immorality. I think we need to be careful there. And then we need to be careful about the seductive, the lewd. Galatians 5, verse 19 says, now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness. Let me skip to the end. And the like, of which I tell you beforehand, just as I also told you in time past, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. Christians are not just to avoid immorality. They're to avoid the lewdness, the licentiousness, the lasciviousness. This is one of those words that gets translated a lot of different ways. The root of lewdness here is the idea of unrestrained. That we are in an unrestrained society. We are in a society that, you know, they described it in the 60s as the sexual revolution. And, you know, we think about revolutions, a lot of times there's a lot of fighting and there's bloodshed. Well, let me tell you, morality lost. You know, in the sexual revolution, morality in this country lost. And we that's the society in which we live. We live in a hyper-sexualized society. And we need to be honest enough to admit that that's what drives so much of the fashion industry. I mean, it drives our entertainment industry. It drives the advertising for I don't care what product it is. It tends to be driven by some sexual aspect in the advertisement. Well, clothing is going to be the same way. It's intended that way. If you look at Matthew, the 5th chapter, in verse 28, well, let's pick up at 27 so we make sure we get the thought. You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Let's start. What's the main point of this? Main point of this is, you better get your thoughts right. You better, you know, not be congratulating yourself, patting yourself on the back and say, well, I've never cheated on my wife. He said, have you coveted your neighbor's wife? Have you been lusting? You know, that the heart matters. But can't we make a secondary point that if dress causes somebody to lust, now, understand, people lust sometimes regardless of how a person is dressed. But if that's a problem, shouldn't I avoid that? I have in my mind, I try to be a calm, level-headed person. But every now and then I have one of those, at least in my mind, I lose it. When somebody defending dress that just to me, we're not talking about maybe it crosses a line, maybe it doesn't cross a line. It's just lewd, lustful by its very intent. And they'll say, well, you know, it doesn't say a word in here about the woman. And so, you know, if he lost after me, that's his fault. And I want to go, and sometimes I do go. Did you manage to finish reading Matthew? Did you make it to the 18th chapter when he warns about being a stumbling block? But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe to the world because of offenses, for offenses must come, but woe to that man by whom the offense comes. You can cause another to sin. Isn't that what he says? Yes and no. God doesn't mean that you can literally cause somebody else to sin, because you always have the power to turn away. But he is recognizing the principle we talked about this morning with those 10 spies who melted the hearts of their brethren. They could have chosen to reject that report and go into the promised land. But God held them accountable for what they had done. Those 10 men died by the plague. We need to be careful. Many of you have seen me put these up before. Questions to ask ourselves. Is it too short? Is it too brief? You know, the old line, and I'll admit I stole it from Sewell Hall, who stole it from somebody else. I mean, he said he did. But a man described an outfit. He said it hesitated to begin and ended almost immediately. You know, there's a lot of that going on today. You know, y'all need me to say that one more time. It hesitated to begin and ended almost immediately. Just sometimes it's just not enough. It's too low. Please, folks. It's too tight. There's one of those, I will acknowledge, sometimes this one can kind of sneak up on us. You know, because it's like I said, I don't hate neckties. I just hate the collars that you have to button in order to wear the necktie. When I watch my weight and buy big enough shirts, it's okay. But there is something, and a lot of men will attest to this, there is something about hanging a dress shirt in the closet that'll make it shrink. You know, that collar just gets smaller, you know. No. You know, in all seriousness, you know, sometimes it started out okay, and we don't realize the difference a few pounds might make. But other times, we know. I mean, we start out. If I jump up and down, can I get these pants on? No, folks, that's too tight. Some things are just too sheer. We can see through it. Why do we get into these habits? A good brother, a man I respect greatly, was talking about this issue. He said, we're not losing the war on modesty. He said, we've already lost it. I want to think that's a little pessimistic. Pessimistic. You know, y'all know what I mean. But we're not doing very well. Why? Unfortunately, I think there are some Christians that in many ways they are devoted disciples of Jesus, but they deliberately, for whatever reason, they're going to push the envelope. They're not going to care about that. And I think it's a deliberate choice on the part of some. But I don't think that's the majority. I'm more optimistic than that. I'm turning my Bible to Ephesians 6 because I want to read something there. But I think what happens in many more cases is we really want to be good. But it's hard. It's just hard. We live in such a corrupt society. We live in the midst where, and it applies to the men too, but for the young ladies especially, and not so young, their fashions, sometimes it's difficult to find that which is decent. And when you're young especially, there is a pressure to conform. The old, the nail that sticks up gets hammered down. It's not easy. Why did I ask you to turn to Ephesians 6? Verse 10, finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. I want to encourage you. You can win this battle. It is not easy. The forces of evil, they dominate in the area of fashion and style. And there is a pressure to conform. It just is natural. But do know there are people praying for you. And the armor of God is there for you. There's a third reason. I think, and this is a big one. Sometimes we just don't think about it enough. There'll be times somebody will say to me, I don't see anything wrong with, and it'll be, you know, on this I'm talking about clothing. Sometimes it's some other issue. And as I say, there are a couple of explanations. One, I could be wrong about it. Or secondly, there's three. Sometimes a person could be lying when they say they don't see anything wrong with it. They do, they just want to do it anyway. But really and truly, there are a lot of times people, they don't see anything wrong with it. Maybe because they lack knowledge and experience. There's nothing wrong with being young. But being young does have some limitations about experience and knowledge, wisdom. You know, they don't understand it because they've not tried to think about it. Parents have to help young people, and it's going to be a struggle. But what I really want to do is I just want to beg people, think. Don't just go into the store and grab it off the rack. Order it out of the catalog. Put it to the test. Does it violate the principles we talked about last week? Is it promoting that selfie world? Is it promoting the works of the flesh? Is it intended to be seductive or lewd? I really don't think it's that difficult. No, as I said, if the Bible were going to detail everything that we could do and not do, it would be a book bigger than any of us would ever manage to make it through. But God's given us the principles that can guide us if we're willing to give them honest thought. You know, even good people need occasional reminders. And I hope that what we've done these last 2 weeks will help us, remind us to do better. But I want to say to you, and this in closing, through the years I've seen Christians that I thought, I mean, I really think wanted to be good people, but continually struggled with issues of modesty and lewdness in dress because they never really developed that truly modest heart. You've got to develop that heart. Remember, souls are at stake. We've got to be pleasing unto God. I hope these two lessons have generated thought, given you some things to think about. But going back to Romans 12, that passage begins, "I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God." As we close this evening, I want to point you to the mercies of God and that great sacrifice of Jesus. If you have never taken advantage of that great sacrifice, been cleansed of your sins, there's no reason for you to wait. Tonight is the night you need to respond to the gospel. Be baptized into Christ, have your sins washed away. Child of God not living as you ought, the mercies of God are there. He will cleanse you. He will forgive. If we can help, you come as we stand and sing together.